Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Auto Central, proudly brought to you by your trusted motoring marketplace, autotrader.co.za. It is our weekly slot here, Wednesday 1 to 2, and well, we've got some big news about that because that's not going to be for much longer. Yep, Auto Central undergoing a couple of changes and we're going to be shifting some time slots. My name's Chad Lukoff and joining me in studio, as per usual, Tyron Woods. How are you doing?
How's it, Chad? How are you doing?
All good,
yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, very good, thanks. Good.
Alongside him, Lawrence Minnie.
How are you doing?
How are we doing?
All good.
And then we're joined in studio as well by Harry Fisher. Harry, how are things going that side?
I'm still on two wheels, so everything's good.
On that chair?
I'm just balancing on two wheels.
Balancing
on
two wheels on the chair, fantastic. The man that lives and breathes two wheels. You possibly better know Harry Fisher from the Bike Show on Ignition TV. Harry, fantastic to have you in here. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. You must be short of guests.
Well, no, not quite. Vulmri is going to be joining us. She's running a little behind. So, I mean, she's the one that's, you know, probably going to bend your ear 10 to the dozen.
She always does.
Yeah, we better get our questions in soon then.
Our questions before she joins. Going to have to there. But yeah, folks, touch base quickly. What's been happening the weekend, Ty, on your side?
Not much. Watched the MotoGP, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Some interesting...
Getting into it.
Yeah, I am actually. The strategy behind the riding is what I thoroughly enjoyed, you know. Mm. The fact that those guys go so fast in the weight still scares the hell out of me, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Because there's been a little bit of backlash about that, and it's, you know, some of the guys are saying, PS Formula One, you need to look at these guys. Don't just sit there and call off a race because of a little bit of rain.
Rain, yeah.
So I've seen a little bit of the backlash. I didn't quite get the race in that. I'm guessing it was a good one.
It was pretty good, actually. It was exciting. The MotoGP race was very exciting.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
It was so topsy-turvy. I mean, it's just like a couple of weeks ago at Aston, anybody could have won. And in fact, anybody did. You know, it was the most ridiculous race. And then Marquez came from way, way back.
Yeah, he was lying in 13th and then landed up...
About 25 seconds, 20 seconds ahead at the end.
Yeah.
No, it's ridiculous.
And all just because his pit crew called him off and they put slicks. The track had dried. They had dry patches. Mm. And please, if my terminology is incorrect, just correct me.
But, the dry line, it's called.
The dry line, there we go. And he got called off and they put slicks on his bike. And he was doing 8 seconds... faster than, you know,
the
other guys.
And it was a lap.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And it was such a bad strategy call by the other guys who were leading. There was Dovizioso, there was Rossi. And they just stayed out too long.
His pit crew were going,
they were going bananas.
They were screaming and hands in the air.
You think they'd have sorted out some kind of signal, like, you know, excuse me, somebody has changed to slicks and he's coming very, very fast up behind you.
When my wife shows me a sign that says box, I know exactly where I need to go. And they clearly don't have the same understanding with their pit crews. So
it's just, I mean, it's not like Rossi's a new boy at this game. So you'd have thought. But at the end of the day, they're the guys out there risking the necks and they know what the grip is and what it's like. So
it's not their first rodeo.
No.
Not really.
I have a question. No. Okay, so we all know Formula One. The guy pulls in, zip, 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 tires on and off.
Away
6 seconds and they're gone.
Mm. Yeah.
How exactly do they accomplish that on a motorcycle?
They have a second bike.
Are they allowed to do that?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It's called flag-to-flag racing. In the old days, they would stop the race and then everyone would fit the wet tyres and then they'd restart. Nowadays, they have their second bike lined up in the pit with wet weather tyres or intermediates. And so they literally just come in, jump off one bike onto the other, straight out again.
And in terms of regulations and that, the motor naturally needs to be virtually identical spec. Are they allowed a different setup on the bike
They can set it. Because, I mean, a wet weather bike or a wet weather setting is much softer than a dry setting.
One would imagine, yeah.
So the bike can be completely differently set up. There's no problem about that.
All right, so it's just up to them as to deciding on what is going to be, well, the happy medium, per se, of that wet one, and just being, you know, well in tune with it as to when you actually need to switch over and if it is necessary to switch over.
This is it, and as we saw on Sunday, it was imperative to switch over. The guys who were just trying to stay out on the wet weather tyres, they just lost so much time, it was all over for them.
All right, well, we're going to touch base quickly with a bit of a news item that, rattled us through, unfortunately, a little bit of a somber tone in that. One of our friends and one of our previous guests, and somebody that, well, myself, I've worked with him many years in the past, was passed away on Monday. And no doubt if you've been following anything in the news, Gugulethu Gugu Zulu passed away on Monday at the age of 38 years old. known as the fastest brother in Africa. And very, very sad. It was something that really, really shocked us because Gugu Zulu, the racing driver, he's been a guest on Auto Central numerous times as well. He was a fantastic racing driver, you know, both
fantastic person,
yeah, both on the track and off the track. He on circuit and dirt, he had a list of accomplishments as long as my arm, and he's raced overseas. He worked as a stunt driver on films and was fast becoming a real household name. I mean, I first was introduced to Gugu probably about 2005 2006. And, just over the years, we just got a chance to work with him. Gugu, unfortunately, passed away as a result of altitude sickness. He went to Kilimanjaro with his wife, Lesego, and a whole bunch of other celebrities for Keep a Girl in School project. It was as a part of giving back for this year's Nelson Mandela Day. He posted, their task was actually to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And he did complain few days leading up to it about how he was struggling with the altitude sickness and the acclimatization and that, and unfortunately on Monday started battling breathing, and they made a rapid descent and that, and unfortunately passed away despite everybody's best efforts. And it really it shocked the motor racing and the motor community as a whole, and myself, having a tough time, you know, a guy that was very infectious in terms of his voice, his laugh and his character, that just did so much good for everybody out there and was giving back, just to have lost his life, I don't want to say it senselessly, but almost so unrelated and trying to give back, it's just a massive tragedy. The good news is, though, that they have set up a trust fund for his young daughter, because he leaves behind his wife, Lechego, and his daughter, Leletu, who just celebrated her first birthday, so very, very sad there. But they have put together a bit of a trust fund so that his young daughter will be able to, you know, have a successful, comfortable life going forward. And yes, if you'd like to contribute to this, we will post the details out on our social media of how you can make a contribution. And that it's going to be going into a trust fund for her schooling, her education and her needs and that, so that some of the weight is taken off of Lechego's, you know,
the burden on the family.
The burden on the family and that. So all of us at Auto Trader and here at Auto Central, we extend our deepest condolences, our thoughts and prayers with the entire Zulu family.
Yeah.
And we're really, really going to miss Gugu. Hi, Vilmary.
Am I on?
Nice of you to join us.
Thank you. I did you miss me.
Had killed you there. Hi, Vilmary. Yeah, yes, sorry, coming in there on that bit of a somber topic, but I'm going to miss Gugu. I'm sure that all of us are going to miss Gugu. He's an infectious personality. So very sad that we've lost another one way too young. But life goes on, and we try and ensure that the life of those that he cared for can carry on unhindered as well.
100%.
Right. So, hi, Vilmary.
Hello.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. So, are you in the scooter or the twin?
Excuse me, I'm on the Honda Africa Twin. Okay.
I'm on the scooter.
He does scooters.
Really?
Yeah.
You see, no hair, scooter, hair, bikes.
No, really?
On their head.
For real?
On their head.
Oh, word.
Yeah.
Don't
I look like a scooter kind of person?
No. You've already established that you look like a, what did we say, a Triumph?
I can't afford one of those just yet, so the scooter's the way to go.
That's the kind of guy.
You know,
working on a Thruxton in training.
There we go.
That's why we're journalists, so we can't actually afford to buy the bikes.
So we just ride.
We just ask them to give them to us for a week or two, and then we're fine.
Yeah, there we go. And do you ever take them back? No, just keep them.
I try and keep them as long as possible until they actually start calling and saying, oi, where is it?
Yeah. I haven't tried that one. I've been tempted to on a few occasions. I really have been
give
tempted
it a go.
To.
Give it a go.
Just disappear. Like, terribly sorry, I'm not in the office today. Can you come back tomorrow?
Mm. Or the day after.
Or the day after, yeah.
How will it be next week Monday?
Yeah.
I'm in North Africa at the moment, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. With the car.
But you know what, Harry? Some of the stories we've heard, I thought some bike journalists were bad in terms of how they're giving the bikes back.
Mm.
Some of the stories we heard from Blackie on the car side.
Yeah.
I mean, really? That is
harrowing.
Really?
Yes.
Well, let's put it this way. Bike doesn't really have many storage compartments.
True.
So you can't leave a chocolate bar in there to melt.
Ooh, that'd be nice. Or even
in the air vents, he said. And wine bottles under the seats to hold it up because they've broken it. Or
how do you break a car seat?
No.
How do you have footprints on the inside of the windscreen?
It sort of goes...
thrusting... force on the seat.
Correct. A proper test drive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
I have a question. Okay, oh, here we go. You're a motorcycle journalist, right? Now, you obviously book vehicles or the bikes in advance for them to be tested. What happens if somebody drops it?
You say sorry and you give it back.
Yeah, and then they don't put another one back in fleet.
Yeah, they probably they'll just mend that one. I mean, okay, if you're going to really crash the thing and properly, you know, just really ruin it, then they might have to sort of put a new one into fleet. But generally, if you just drop it, it's just a scratch on a fairing. And that.
And when I say drop it, I mean they were going around a corner and hit a patch of diesel and spin out.
Look, that's normally marks. It depends what you hit.
Yeah, it's not the coming off, it's the stopping quickly, isn't
it? Yeah. So it's looking at the lamppost and hitting the lamppost. Yeah. Not looking between the tree and the lamppost.
But we haven't had a lot of those, though.
No, I would hope not.
Rectors.
No. I think Matt's my colleague on the bike show. He's had his fair share of written off bikes, but I've done quite well. Only on the racetrack have I managed to crash.
Because Matt's done
understandably so. I mean, that's where that's the proper place to sit and explore limits in that, you know?
I still haven't found my limits. I'm too scared to.
And hence the reason why you're actually probably still sitting here with
us. You see, it's called self-preservation. There you go.
And it's something that sadly a lot of people don't have. And a lot of people that just dive into it, and especially midlife and that, just deciding, well, hey, now that I've got my financial freedom, I'm going to buy the bike that I always wanted.
An R1.
Yeah. No, this is a big,
in
Europe, this is a big problem with, like you say, guys who've reached midlife and their kids have all left university and they've got money sitting there. They go, I had a bike when I was 16 and it was probably like a BSA 250 single with 3 horsepower.
Yeah.
And they go out and they buy themselves a big GS or something and they just wipe themselves out. It's ridiculous.
But it happens here too.
I'm sure.
It's very sad. And because we were saying, because you're allowed if... once you've just done a written exam. So I think they're more strict in where did I go the other day?
You Melbourne. Tell us.
Yeah, I don't know. Melbourne.
I wasn't there. I can't tell you.
The toilet. Sorry. The kitchen.
I had to think about that.
Let's where not they stereotype work on, you.
Yeah. Bedroom then.
Where they work on the amount of time spent, and only then are you allowed a certain CC. So the longer you more experience, the bigger you can use.
Makes complete sense, though.
100%.
So you should start your career on a scooter and then progress as you go.
First world problems.
Yeah.
First world, third world. We're just trying to get a traffic light to work here.
Oh, that's also true.
All right.
It's a shame it's not that bad.
Have you noticed
guys?
How traffic often flows better when the traffic lights aren't working?
Yes.
Have you noticed
that? Or there's none of those Archer and...
Certainly not in this area.
Yeah, I'm not far from here, in a place called Waverley.
Yeah, okay.
Which is near Melrose Arch, so...
Yeah, but...
There's lots of lights, lots of traffic lights. Oh, sorry, robots.
But but we generally do get through quicker with the bikes, so sorry for you.
Yes, with the bikes, yes. That has to be one of the long procession.
The biggest joys ever is skedaddling through traffic, just smiling and waving and being like
lane splitting.
Enjoy city.
I'm not often on the roads in rush hour, but when I do, you just scoot through traffic. You sit and look at these people and you go, why are you being so stupid?
Yes.
You're the most idiotic people. You could be on a bike. You could have been home half an hour ago.
Yeah.
But it gets a bit cold and wet. Oh, shut up. Really?
I shall counter that. Because it is exactly that. When I'm sitting there nice and toasty and dry, enjoying
with my
some
heated seats,
enjoying some music, air conditioning, a balmy 22 degrees, and you're sitting there freezing your nuts off.
You're never that cold. I mean, you buy the right gear, you're
yes,
warm.
Yes, then you're fine.
I mean, seriously. Yeah. There's no argument.
And
here.
The nice bit about that is when you stop and you get a hot shower after that or hot chocolate. Then that's, it was, you're there quicker, so quicker than
I'm still teetering on the side of not needing the hot shower.
I remember not so long ago, some photos of Vilmarie in the parking basement.
Okay, that was hail. That was hail. That's
hail
a
Caesar.
Whole nother different, you don't even want to be in your car for that. That's even worse.
No, I agree. But motorcicles have their upsides and downsides.
No, we're certainly not against them, but
we love motorcycles on Auto Trader.
The only thing, Harry, I don't think that they've managed to get right yet is the heated seats. Is there any bike that's got that?
Yeah, the new Triumph Explorer, the BMW GS, I think can get heated seats. Yeah, there are
heated
quite a
grips,
few.
Yes.
Heated
grips,
yes. Heated grips,
I know. I haven't actually experienced it.
But the thing is, it's not, I mean, your hand's fine, but your bum doesn't really need to be kept warm. It's not on the bike. If you can work out keeping your feet warm, now that would make a big difference. Yeah,
and the hands for me work.
Yeah.
So that's a nice thing with the cars.
Waistcoat and socks and stuff.
Yeah, you can get onesie that electric.
Plugs into the cigarette lighter on the motorcycle.
Because you have so many cigarette lighters on the motorcycle. Yeah. You're sitting at 120 on the highway, I want to have a quick puff. You know? It burns down in about 3 seconds.
We actually have a friend who really likes to do that.
Have a smoke on a bike?
Yes.
That's so attractive.
Helmet up and the cigarette out the side of the mouth.
Until a bit of ice goes into your eyes. You can't see a thing.
Yeah.
He's currently in Japan.
Yeah, no, we're quite jealous about that. So he's experiencing the lifestyle there. Yes, enjoying that.
Why jealous about Japan?
Home of drifting?
Yeah, cultural experience. It's a.
When you say the home of drifting, I mean everyone's just drifting everywhere in Japan.
No, no, just
city streets, country roads.
Well, at night, yes.
No, there's a fantastic car culture. If you can access it, but that's very strange because while there's a lot of cross-pollination almost and muddying of waters in South African and American and that's in sort of cultural aspects and pastime activities, it's very segregated in Japan, where you could be living right next door to somebody that does, you know, is an operatic singer and you're never going to know it. And you're never going to know that there is an, let's say, opera lifestyle in Japan. They're all just very secluded and very reserved. So it's actually having to go out and find these little pockets of culture around there and interests. And it's very strange in the sense that absolutely, Bosozoku and all that sort of stuff. And
culture
there,
club.
The car insane. Culture there is just very, very intense. Once you crack into it and you know where to go to find it, it's filled with a whole bunch of very, very passionate individuals. And there isn't the same sort of egos involved there when it comes to it. So you see people just lay bare their souls almost, if I can put it that way without sounding too hippie, in their vehicles. They're going to do something because they like that. So if they want to fit Hello Kitty stickers to their cars or their bikes or whatever, they'll do that. And they're quite comfortable with it.
So that's an extension of their personality.
Absolutely,
essentially. They're
yeah.
happy to, you know,
fantastic.
That's and who
to,
I am.
And to just see people in that sort of light without it being this measuring contest, this ego contest that we see in, you know, in motor racing and motorsports locally and in other countries, it's just fantastic. It's almost, there's a purity of it that I'd really like to experience myself.
Hmm.
Yeah, they got a very big bike culture there as well.
As well, fantastic,
believe it or not.
Fantastically
you
big bike
you wouldn't
culture.
Think so, but yeah.
And especially classic bikes.
Yeah.
And not, restoration of.
Not sports bikes, not Harley Davidsons. They really like their old British ESAs and
yeah,
and
that's the irony. They've got the biggest motorcycle industry in the world, but they like their British classic bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, also, oddly enough, I mean, if you take a look at the number of manufacturers that are there just on the car side of things, your Ferraris, BMWs, Mercedes, Benz, Porsches, they love their Porsches there. And it's so strange, but I suppose it's like
not too many Japanese hyper sports cars, though, are there? I mean, there's the Nissan GTR and
Honda NSX.
Mm.
They have created a good couple in the past. And,
yeah.
You know, so there's some fantastic Japanese, cars available, culture cars available, but they still lust after basically what wasn't available.
Mm.
But I suppose it's that human nature of wanting what you can't have. You know, we sit here and we want to play American football or watch baseball or something of the sorts. And for them, it's, well, you're getting access to European cars.
Mm.
Right. Okay. So,
Vilmarie, I can see you itching. There's something you want to
no,
talk about.
No, why are you looking at me? You're
there
running the show.
There's something you want to talk about.
Not at all.
Well, in the time that you weren't here, we asked Harry all our questions.
Yeah,
I doubted. So, okay, so, let's go. Let's do it again.
Harry, you guys, as part of the bike show and that, you guys are responsible for fronting up the Pirelli Bike of the Year in South Africa.
Yes.
You want to tell us a little bit more about that? We've heard a bit about it from Vilmarie, because Vilmarie is now on the jury and
she is
going to be part of the judging panel.
She's been given a second chance.
Ooh, here's a juicy story. Please do tell. We're all ears.
No.
I'm going to kill her mic in the meantime so that she can't rebuttal.
I'll come over for yours.
Yes, Bike of the Year. It's this is now in its fourth year. And my colleague on the bike show, Matt Durrans, and myself, We kind of looked around, and it's one of these things that a lot of people have spoken about, but nobody's actually ever done anything about it. And obviously, Car of the Year was huge for many years. We just said, we need to do something for the bike. So we literally just said, right, we're going to do it. Contacted all the manufacturers. And I mean, obviously, without them, their buy-in, we couldn't have done this.
So, no, because as soon as you have one that doesn't play the game, it sort of, you know, throws the proverbial spanner in the works.
This is it. Yeah, this is it. So we went to them all, and they were all really supportive of it. And Pirelli came in as a sponsor. Yeah, and it's just growing and growing each year that we do it. It just gets more and more popular. Mm-hmm. The actual competition itself doesn't grow because you have to keep that to a certain size. But no, I mean, we reckon with the combined media reach, it's some 7-8 million people that, you know, across all the media that's actually attending the event.
Yeah.
So it's got a good reach. And what we said right at the beginning was we don't care if the outcome or the result is controversial, because then it'll stimulate conversation. It'll get people talking.
Absolutely. We've seen that in the past with Car of the Year, with Porsche taking wins and that, and back-to-back wins, and that made things very controversial.
Yeah.
Granted, it brought the organisation into a bit of a light as well, but a controversial result remains exactly that, a talking point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that gets back to... Sorry, Ari.
No.
Which is interesting, because I mean, I think you need to explain to us as well. Then maybe I have a heads up this time.
Maybe you know what you're doing. Yeah, well done.
Now the story comes
up. How we choose.
Okay.
Yeah, what is the selection process?
It's very simple. For a bike to be eligible, it has to be a new for now it's a 2016 model. It can't be a lightly made over previous model, you know, like a new paint job or
facelift or something.
It has to be significantly re-engineered or a brand new model for that for this particular year. So I think we had a list of about 30 to 35 eligible bikes across all manufacturers. Road bikes we're talking about here. Just we don't include dirt bikes or enduro bikes, anything like that.
Scooters.
We do include scooters, but they're just...
The logistics.
They never are any.
Pull to swallow.
They can't keep up.
Yeah, this is
the test ride.
So then that list then goes off to the judges. We have 15 judges drawn from across the motorcycle media.
How are these judges selected?
Basically on the reach of their respective publications.
Okay, so somebody, their credibility...
What about crashes?
That would take too long to tot up. Somebody like Simon Free, how would you count how many crashes he's had? So yeah, it goes on reach. So like, we've got obviously Bike Essays on board, Superbike magazine, we've got Star Motoring's coming on board, IOL online, Wheels 24, Car Magazine, obviously the Bike Show, and whatever Villemarie sort of scribbles for these days.
Cliff Central.
There you go.
I mean, Auto
Central.
Sorry, Auto Central.
Oh, she doesn't even know. She's weird.
I saw the logo then, obviously.
Big news coming.
Yes.
Soon.
So the list of eligible bikes goes off to the judges and they're asked to vote for their top 15. No particular order, and it's difficult to explain, but the criteria, especially at the beginning, it's... How much of an improvement is it over, say, a previous model? How much has it advanced the particular class that the bike might be in? Mm-hmm. Stuff like aesthetics, equipment, technology, and even just that wow factor. You know, does it make
desirability?
And would you spend your own money on it? You know, this kind of thing.
No, which is something we always ask.
Do you factor in things like value for money in terms of?
It's very difficult to put almost like
a tangible measurement on with a bike. I mean, with a car, we can sit there and say, well, it's got this sort of equipment and that sort of spec level.
Yeah.
And you're not getting those sort of creature comforts and luxuries, dare say, in a bike.
Yeah.
And it's not really something that is measured, because you're not sitting and you're not particularly looking for, well, GPS navigation or, heated grips on a 1 litre superbike.
This is the thing. And it does, so value for money doesn't really come into it, which is why we included things like the wow factor and, how does it really float your boat? When you look at it, you go, oh, yeah, you know.
I want to ride that.
I want to ride that. So we picked the 15 finalist bikes from there. And then we meet at Red Star Raceway, where all the bikes are lined up. And then we ride off to the Lowveld, over to Sarby and Hazy View, that area. Mm-hmm. Spend 3 days just riding up and down the 22. And obviously we go over Longton Pass and then through Leidenberg, through Dulstrom, and a bit of highway work. And we come up with a winner. But now what's important to remember is that, okay, we've got super bikes, we've got commuter bikes, we've got adventure bikes, we've got cruisers. Each bike in the competition isn't being judged against the other bikes in the competition.
That's very important, because that was also one of the things that was changed with the Car of the Year judging, is where it was largely regarded as, well, you're competing against these other vehicles. It's not. It's actually just in its own segment. And you're just looking for the car that just rises head and shoulders above.
Yeah. Which car or which bike has made a big enough advance over the others in its class to be the overall winner. And we score it very simply. Each judge is asked to vote for their top six bikes, and we score it on the old Formula One system. So 10 points for first, 6, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
And then that's as simple as it is.
All get telly together.
And we come up with a winner.
And you come up with a winner.
And it's, I mean, and I would say that actually the best bikers won each year. The first year we did it, the new BMW water-cooled GS won. The second year was the KTM 1290 Super Duke. And then last year was the Kawasaki H2. So all three of those bikes, they were kind of the right bike one. You know what
and
I mean?
Also not just all, let's say, your 1 litre superbike or your super sports bikes. You know, there's quite a variety in that. And you can understand why each one would have taken a win.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, first water-cooled GS. Yes, as an adventure bike and that, it's clearly rising up and it's doing new things. And it's...
And it was a significant update over the old one.
Over the old one. And but over what was available on the market at the time, correct?
Yeah. It's not only the first place, though. Second place and third place is also really amazing to see. I mean, second place was the XCX Triumph Tiger.
Last year.
Yeah. Which I now own, by the way.
Oh, so you're not biased at all then?
Well, we don't have another 800 this year.
No, we've got the 1200.
You see.
Yes, all right. So yes, I mean, last year it was Kawasaki H2, Triumph 800 XCX, and then the Yamaha R1. So the Triumph beat the Yamaha, which somehow doesn't make sense. But in this country, the adventure bike is king.
Yes.
So you can see why there was that slight bias towards the adventure bike side.
But would you, I mean, the reason for me buying the Triumph, I paid attention to... to the Pirelli bike of the year. Do you think people do before buying?
I'd like to think so. Yeah. I'd really, I mean, like I said, with a reach of 7-8 million, I'd like to think that people were looking at it and going...
before buying.
I mean, the problem is, you know, there's no such thing as a bad bike.
Yes.
So even a bike that comes in 15th out of the 15, it's still a fantastic bike.
It's still a finalist.
This is exactly, yes, it's still a finalist.
Essentially best in its class.
Yeah.
It's still up to, it's a personal choice at the end of the day. But with Pirelli Bike of the Year, what it does, it brings a lot of specialists together, people that understand and give the professional opinion, you know.
In the same environment. On the same roads, you know, so
the same conditions.
It's not necessarily a controlled environment per se, but it is a very similar environment that everybody's getting a chance to sample just about every bike on.
Yeah.
You know, over the following 2 days.
It's not a controlled environment at all.
Not in the slightest.
No, but there's a fair amount of control. Instead of just taking, you know, when journalist X went and tested it down in Cape Town in February, you know, versus journalist Y, they tested it in June in Johannesburg, you know, it could be the same bike, but just because of the weather, the conditions, the area and that, it all becomes, you know, they've got different opinions because maybe it doesn't work in Johannesburg in this sort of structure, but maybe it's perfectly suited for the Cape Town lifestyle, Cape Town weather.
Yeah.
To put them all in the same place, same weather conditions, same road conditions, riding in the group, back
is
to back.
Is as fair as you're going to get.
I believe is as controlled as you're going to get, really.
And there's only, the only other way you could do it is to hold it at a race circuit, but then... that also
not really fair on like an adventure bike then, correct?
Well, yeah.
No, they handle.
They do handle very well. But
they
the
would
thing
handle,
is this way
it's
we've
not
got
their element.
This way we've got highway, we've got you know, sort of country roads, we've got a mountain pass, then we've obviously got the infamous 22 between Sarby and Hazyview, which is the ultimate kind of handling track almost.
And passing through towns where you can sample a little bit of the living with it at low speed as well.
Yeah.
You know, is it cumbersome? You know, are you battling? Is it difficult to control of the sorts? No, I think that's absolutely fantastic.
So it's a well balanced environment.
I think so. That's
around,
nice and balanced. Very balanced.
Yeah.
So what I remember initially, I mean, one could be like really fantastic on nice twisties and then you get a little bit of a bumpy road and you want to like give it back.
Yes.
Can we swap please? Now.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing. It throws up obstacles in the way of every bike, but equal obstacles. So as you say, a bumpy road on a superbike is pretty hideous actually.
Yeah.
Whereas you just float across it on an adventure bike. So we try and just make it as fair as possible.
So do you go out first? Do you guys choose the route based on your own riding there or just some opinions from the guys? This route now haven't been done before.
No, this is now the... No, this is actually... We've actually done it there for all 4 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. You were
so,
there. That
so
was
I
the
did
route
know the
did.
One. Okay, sorry. Then I know.
Yes,
well,
so,
I have
so
an
then
idea.
Then you'll know the road. Now, Pirelli's a headline sponsor of it.
Yes.
What sort of involvement do they have in whether it's the selection process? What is their involvement?
Nothing.
In the
they're just literally the financial sponsor. So they put the money up. They get to brand the event. as title sponsor, and that's as far as it goes.
Is this Pirelli South Africa?
It started off as Pirelli South Africa, but the whole structure of Pirelli has changed in South Africa. So now the sponsorship actually comes from Pirelli Italy. So they're seeing the value.
Which is brilliant, because I mean, that's international backing per se.
This is international backing, which is very cool, because what we want to do with the Bike of the Year is to make it World Bike of the Year.
Oh, wow.
Hopefully from next year.
That's fantastic.
And then so we would get 15 journalists in from around the world, again, from the biggest websites, the biggest print magazines from around the world, bring them all to South Africa and do a World Bike of the Year. That's the goal. So with a brand like Pirelli, they are a global company. So we want to try and impress them that, yes, we can do this, and this has got legs.
Almost leverage it, but with the springboard that is an international backer like Pirelli.
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously we make sure that all the bikes are on Pirelli tyres when we go out on the weekend.
And have stickers and the whole...
Yeah.
Does that cause a little bit of an issue with manufacturers that possibly have manufacturer recommended rubber?
You know what? They have rubber that they come on from new, but there's no thing. You can't say that the Pirelli tire is worse than its recommended rubber. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It'll still perform perfectly well, if not sometimes maybe a bit better.
Okay.
Yeah. If you've got a super sticky super sports tire on a super bike, then it's going to work well. So, no, there's no real problem about that at all.
I'm just thinking the car side of things, because you have vehicles that have a recommended tyre. You know, the suspension and the steering geometry and everything has been set up for the response of this tyre.
Yes.
And by changing that, you're ruining, let's say, handling characteristics or the ride quality.
Yeah.
You know, a vehicle that's fitted with run flats, changing that is drastically going to change the ride quality, but you don't encounter any of that in the bike.
No, that doesn't really happen with bike tires,
which is fantastic, because then you can do that honor to the sponsor of saying,
"Yes,
listen, we're all on the same tire."
Yeah, absolutely.
That was actually the question I was going to ask. Is like, you know, I know that certain bike manufacturers, recommend use this tire. Would they have an issue with taking those tires off and putting Pirelli's on, because they're the title sponsor?
You know what? If they do, then we just say, well, tough luck. They're going on Pirelli's, so.
Yeah. in order to be legible for this competition.
Exactly.
Yes, correct.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the terms. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, they're funding, and this is not a cheap exercise. It's a whole weekend away for 15 journalists.
Yeah.
And, I mean, can't come out of your pocket.
No, it doesn't. And we have actually, and I do need to mention this, Total, the petrol company, have come in as fuel sponsor. Total. If you say Total, you're in big trouble. So it has to say Total.
Well, I've learned something.
Let me ask
you this. How do you say... No, I don't want to say it, because then I'm going to give it to you. It's a car. Spell it. Okay. H-Y-A-N-D-A-I.
Yeah. Hyundai.
It's Hyundai.
Not what, completely
Hyundai.
Right.
How's it?
No.
What is it then?
It's Hyundai like Sunday.
Hyundai. Oh.
That's what the big chief in charge said. No, please don't say it like this.
But so. Total is
Total.
Total.
Because we've all known it since we were knee-high to a...
You know, that's a brand that's been around us for, you know...
Decades.
And we
decades.
Didn't know. Did and you know?
No, but even if you go... you go and take adverts that they would have played 3, 4, 5 years ago.
I think
it was... And their payoff line was, turn to Total.
Yeah, this is a new... This is a relatively
new
thing.
The Total Rally.
Oh, is it a new thing?
Yeah, this is... I mean, I remember last year, because they were also a fuel sponsor last year, and then we were told, no, you have to call it Total.
Because it's... Put French. Another A in there.
Exactly.
Or something,
it's,
you know?
It's the Dutch spelling. T-O-T-A-A-L.
Total.
Okay, so...
But French energy company, because they don't want to be known as an oil company per se. They're wanting to be known as an energy company, because they are also working on alternative energy sources.
Well, they have to. Those are going to get left behind.
Mm. Quite correct, yes.
Yeah.
I spent some time with some of the guys from Total.
Yes.
And that's also where I heard it. I was like, well, this is a little strange in there. Yeah. But with the Toyota Gazoo Racing Team and... being as one of the sponsors, they were in there, and I was learning all about it. I was like, wow.
Talking about alternative energy, I have a question. Have you ridden an electric bike?
Yes, there is an electric bike in South Africa called the Zero from America.
And? Is it good?
It is. It's remarkable. It's almost sort of a bit weird, because...
There's no noise.
No noise, but you've got this fantastic acceleration from from standstill. But then you've always got that...
What's the range on that thing?
I can't remember off the top of my head. We did it a couple of years ago. We tested it a couple of years ago. It's not brilliant. But, I mean, for a daily commute of 30, 40 kilometres, it'd be perfectly fine. And you just charge it up. Because it charges just from an ordinary plug socket in the wall.
Oh, wow.
Are they expensive?
But I want to hear the bike.
You're right, that is part of the problem. And also, if you filtering through traffic, if you're on people something that's silent, it can be a bit worrying. Mm. But no, it's an amazing thing to ride. And like all these sort of technological things, the battery life is just going to get better and better and better, better so quickly until you'll be able to do 200, 300, 400 kilometres on it. And then it becomes a real viable proposition as a mode of transport.
Absolutely.
And in terms of, we haven't been keeping tabs on it, but in terms of hybrid technology, has that started filtering through to the bike world yet?
No, nothing like that.
Nothing viable.
Not that we know. I mean, it might be on the drawing boards or in the sort of in the boffin's board.
Have a small 50cc motor, petrol motor that drives an electric motor.
Mm. Is the engineer talking now?
Sorry, we had this conversation about, you know, if is an electric bike still a bike?
And
do you need a license for
and
it?
How would it be licensed?
You might as well strap an electric motor to a bicycle. And
but the license should not be based on just what you're riding. You are being exposed to public
road. It
should
be where you ride.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Remember,
all right, and your pedal cycle?
You know, well, you're not allowed on the highway with it.
No, you're not allowed on the highway, but you're also not allowed on the highway with a 50cc.
And we see plenty of guys.
So there's a little bit of an overlap, grey area sort of thing.
Yeah, but your question's license. Mm. Should there be a license?
And the thing is, as this is a car and motorbike show, we should be talking about bicycles anyway.
Yeah.
Filthy things. Littering the countryside.
Agreed.
Unbelievable.
Be careful, a lot of those own motorbikes.
That's fine. Well, they should just sell the bikes and buy more motorbikes.
You know, when I started the academy.
Aspirational.
Yes, when I started the academy initially, I thought, oh, the only clients I want are cyclists. Because at least I know they have balance.
It just doesn't work like that.
We spoke the one day about there were guys that were spending upwards of 300,000 rand on a bicycle.
And you still got to pedal it yourself.
Yes.
How would you do that when you have access to a motorcycle? I mean, come on.
Now, look, I do agree there. No, there's the one's just better. It looks better. It sounds better. It goes quicker. There's just no logic.
It just isn't. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to chat a little bit more about the bike show and the likes. But first, an ad from Auto Trader.
Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
Choice. Sometimes you have it and sometimes you don't. Auto Trader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. Auto Trader New Car. The choice is yours.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, there we go. Quick, brief, no song today. No, we're going to get straight back into it.
Too much to talk.
Yeah, no, we've got too much to talk about.
I'm just too interesting.
Yes, no, but you do. Absolutely. You have a face for radio.
Ouch.
Good.
Wow. No love.
No, you sound good.
Thank you.
No love.
You had to say that, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Part of what we do is reviews. And, we're going to be chatting about our review for the week, which happens to be the Renault Kadjar, which is actually quite an interesting vehicle. I'm going to be going on the launch of a new Kadjar introduction tomorrow, in fact. But we had the Dynamique 4x4 diesel. And in a manual, guys, and Lawrence, it was you that drove it, correct?
That is correct, yes.
What's it called, a Dynamique?
Yeah.
It's a trim level.
Yeah, it was basically the top of the line. Leather seats, heated seats, the works, panoramic sunroof. It has all the bells and whistles.
And your thoughts on it?
Hmm. Well, that's a pregnant couple, wasn't it?
I'm just trying to think how to say that we might as well buy a Nissan Qashqai.
Really, hey?
Because it's exactly the same car. It's basically underneath, it's a Nissan Qashqai with a French flair on top.
Okay, so the underpinnings in that are all Nissan Qashqai.
Yep.
But that's not a bad thing.
No, because they.
Because the Nissan Qashqai is actually
a
very, very good car.
It was the one I was taken with last year. I'm just kind of hoping that the EDC that you drive tomorrow, which is the.
It's a dual clutch system.
Dual clutch version of the Qashqai that I had. Is not that CVT. That was the Qashqai we had last year.
Yeah, the Qashqai came in with a CVT gearbox, which was a little bit of a letdown there for it. But no, the EDC is, of course, a dual clutch system. So it's guaranteed to be better, but we've had some problems with dual clutch gearboxes in the past.
I'm kind of hoping that they're going to put that very smart all-wheel drive system coupled to that EDC system. And I hope that that's going to be what they use, because... Both of those things are awesome.
the four-wheel drive system I was very impressed with.
Who are they pitching really? As car at? Like, who's their ideal target
families.
Market?
Families.
Huh? Yeah.
Families. Suburbia. You're not exactly going to be climbing up the side of Long Tom Pass with this vehicle because it can't, but you can give it a try.
Yeah. No low range in it, but no. It's got 4x4 capability, so yes. Dirt roads, farm roads, that sort of stuff. Yeah, can handle that with relative ease. It's just as soon as you start getting to quite obstacles per se that you'd actually need a proper 4x4. Technical stuff.
But the car's too pretty. You really wouldn't want to take it off-road.
It is a good-looking vehicle, hey?
Very pretty.
And especially if you get it in like that blazing red color.
Yeah, that's exactly what they call it, blazing red.
Blazing red, yeah. Okay, well, there we go. I was going to call it Sol Red, but the wrong company.
So this is Sunday, Northern Farms, mountain bike on the back. Look the part.
Very much so, I think, hey?
Yeah.
It was, you did spend considerably more time with it than what I did. And it's nicely styled. I like the way that it's styled. It's not to say that, like, the Qashqai is unattractive. Yeah. It's just got that sort of French flair to it.
Now, I actually loaded the family into the car.
Yeah.
And we took a drive out to Bronkhorstspruit.
Okay. Oh, thanks for saying hi.
Yeah. Well, I didn't exactly know where your farm is, but we ended up out at that temple. Mm. You know, just a day trip. And, you know, I have two kids and they argue and bicker and carry on like most kids do in the back of a car.
You just lean back and
smack
them.
And this time, not at all.
No.
They sat in the back and they were staring out of their panoramic sunroof and chupstool for what was essentially a two-hour drive.
But how long would that last, though? I mean, seriously.
No.
After the 20th time of doing that journey.
Yeah.
Did they fight on the way back?
They started getting crabby because they were tired. But then you just reach back.
Wasn't the car's fault.
No, you were just driving too slowly, weren't you?
Then you just reach back and you pull the divider between the two seats down. You stay on that side, you stay on that side.
Oh, you're joking.
Great Wall of
China. They have one of those?
Yeah.
So you can separate your two children?
Yes.
That is a win and it's a must have.
So does the Nissan also have that?
I mean, I can't recall. I don't know that I ever sat in the back of the Qashqai.
The Qashqai does have one, and so does the Tucson.
No, it doesn't.
Mm. Yep.
You're going to have to show me
a
that.
A centre armrest in it. Now, yes. I mean, this Qajar is very well specced. I mean, it is the top of the range. What are some of the things that you're going to get in it? I mean, you've got your climate control, electric windows, electric seats, correct?
Yep, leather seats, heated leather seats, panoramic sunroof. The all-wheel drive system that we were talking about.
Height and reach adjustable steering wheel.
Yeah, there's the eco mode, so you can switch it into... Because that's a very big thing with them, is you're actually now in that little 7-inch TFT screen that sits in the center console. They actually have like a video game.
Okay.
For petrol consumption. So you basically try and beat your own score. Every time you go and drive, you're trying to beat
and
your own
score. And by driving more economically. We've seen this before. We saw it in the Hyundai.
Imagine that on a bike, Larry.
There'd be so many deaths, wouldn't there? I'm looking at the display, not the road ahead. I mean, that must be seriously dangerous, though.
But also, we don't try safe fuel, though.
No.
Well, when you're on a bike, you don't want to safe petrol. You don't really care.
You're already doing your bit for the environment.
You knock on the side of the tank to see how much petrol's in there. You know,
funnily enough, modern bikes do have fuel gauges. It's incredible development. It came out about 40 years ago. Yeah,
giving the age away there, are we?
Harry, do you own a car?
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay. And what do you drive?
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, and why do you drive it?
I drive an Audi, and I drive it because I have two children also.
Yeah.
So, I would love to do away with a car completely.
Mm. But unfortunately, it's one of those, almost a grudge purchase for you.
It is, really. And, I mean, my wife also got a car, so really to have two cars is a bit excessive.
Okay. Mm.
But unfortunately...
It actually is in a household, I think. Well, unless both need to go to work in it. But,
but
you don't
necessary.
Have to.
No, I don't. We both work from home. And I mean, I actually did the sums about ditching one car and all the running costs and the repayments and insurance and so on. And I mean, I could
buy another bike.
No, that was also my thinking. Yeah. Mrs. said no. Yeah. I could get the kids to and from school in an Uber and probably save about $4,000 or $5,000 a month.
Really?
We've got friends who had two vehicles. A Freelander and a 3 Series BMW. Mm. And they sold the Freelander and became a one vehicle family. And he Ubers to work every day and back. He has saved himself about $3,000 a month.
Mm.
And he has gained an additional 2 hours
to do work.
Yeah.
100%.
So, on the way to the office,
he's already checking mail. Sort of
if you're not like me, you get motion sickness in any car, most cars, if I'm not driving. So that's the problem. But did you read about the Uber story in Cape Town?
Yeah, no, terrible.
That's really bad. Did you know
I haven't heard this, no.
I mean, I think the taxis threatened to take out all the Ubers if they come in.
Yeah.
into Joburg, take out. I don't know exactly what that means, but
for a fancy meal or something.
We're hoping, but unlikely. There has been a lot of there has been a lot of flack around the whole Uber, and it's not so much the taxi operators in terms of your minibus taxis.
As it's the meter taxis.
It's the meter taxis.
But it happens up here in Joburg as well. I just think it's pathetic. Yeah, it's so small-minded. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Yeah. If you want to catch a meter taxi because that's what you want to catch. Yeah. If you want to go in Uber because that's your
vibe
and that's what you want to do.
There's enough people for everyone.
100%.
Yeah.
The fact is that Uber provide a fantastic service. It's cheap as chips. The cars are clean. The drivers are cool. Why wouldn't you want to use it?
It's an operation that is moving the country forward. That's the way I see it.
Completely.
And, you know, to be stuck in the past, these guys are going to, you know what, then change your taxi and sign up for Uber. Or is there somebody out there that can develop
a
different kind of Uber for South Africa, for the meter taxis? Like, you know what, guys.
But they made a lot of arrests, though, hey? So I don't know where they're at now, but hopefully there isn't that problem here.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's been a little bit of conflict in that, and especially around Gautrain stations. That's where we've picked it up locally here. Airports and Gautrain stations where Uber pretty much isn't welcome because either you're using the metered taxis or the Gautrain buses, and they're wanting you to use that because naturally now you're sitting there and you're taking away. But I'm sorry, the bus routes are not always
Uber
viable
picks you up from home.
Or pickable.
Yes.
So does the meter taxi as well?
If you wanted to.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's
going to pay
4 to 5 times the price.
Well, exactly.
Well, and that's exactly. You're cutting into our profits by offering something cheaper. Instead of just competing with you, we're going to try and get rid of you. Sadly, there's a very backwards, archaic sort of mentality that goes on in that. And instead of just saying, listen, when the McDonald's opens up next to the Burger King, you better just, you know, make sure
your
prices are right.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, you're not going to sit there and burn down the opposition.
Which is
what we're trying to do here with a very short-sighted, narrow-minded approach to things is just burn down the opposition. And it's,
you know, or
it's
just change your strategy. So the meter taxis are sitting outside the bus station. All right. Let's say they only focused on short trips, and a short trip costs you $30 and you can do no more than 5 or 6 Ks. So I arrive, the taxi's there. I don't have to wait for the guy to arrive, like flag down an Uber, whatever it is. Jump in the taxi. It's 5 Ks. It's R30. Thanks very much for coming. There's your market.
Everyone's happy.
If you're going to do more than 10 Ks, more than 15 Ks, then I go with Uber because it's cheaper on my pocket. Like, these guys should actually work together and sort out the transport problems in South Africa. And if they could solve that, you know.
I wonder if anyone would want an Uber bikes thing.
I was thinking about that.
I read an article, and I didn't read the whole thing. I read the headline. So actually, I'm going to shut up.
Moving swiftly on.
But very curious. I mean, we've spoken about car sharing, and you experienced it in Australia as well when you went there about the car
bike sharing.
And no doubt that there is a potential for something like that, and something that actually maybe we should do a little more research into, see if there are any successful bike sharing programs anywhere in the world.
I actually think it would be a lot more successful than the car side in South Africa, because I honestly think the bike industry do have that some sort of a, I don't know how you feel, Harry, but there is a respect for bikes. So it's not about, you know what I mean, you're not going to go to try and screw the next one who's going to ride it now, damage the bike.
You're not necessarily going to ride it like a rental.
No, I think the motorcycle industry generally respect bikes.
I think it's the risk versus reward side of things there.
Yes.
Being an absolute hooligan on a bike is probably going to end up in your death. Whereas
or
being an absolute hooligan in a car can wreck the car
and
you're still fine. Yeah. So I think there's a safety aspect of it that could work well. I mean, there's places, Florida, the Keys, you can sit there and you hire a scooter, and how you're going to travel up and down.
You know,
if you
go to Thailand, you don't even need a bike license. You got to show your ID, you pay your 50 baht, and you can take the bike for the day.
Yeah,
but that's just dodgy.
Yeah, is it or carnage on the road?
No, but their roads are carnage anyway, so you kind of just
fit in.
You know?
But it is very strange though, because I mean, and I want to put it down to a cultural thing, and with them. And not necessarily religious, but there's a slightly different mentality
in
the Buddhist
cultures.
I mean,
I've never seen more crazy roads in my life.
Yes, it was.
You never hear hooters.
No,
I never heard anyone hooting in Thailand. And the car, if somebody cuts you off, there's no screaming and shouting.
You let him go.
Road rage is gone, and the guy's just gone. And it flows. It works.
Because I understand, if I let you in, it's not going to take any time out of my day.
We're all going to get to the same place.
We're all
going
to get to the same place. We're going to be less stressed. The overall stress level, there's a modicum of control that needs to be exercised there by the general populace in order for that to work. That sadly, I don't think South Africans are quite there just yet.
You say that though.
I honestly, riding a scooter, find that bikers are friendly. And I don't know if you guys pick it up because you're on bikes all the time. But often the guy will, you know, nod their head in acknowledgement that I see you.
I always give a nod to any other rider I see on the road.
Even if he's on a scooter.
If it's you, then probably not. But okay. no, other scooter riders.
Fair enough. But the only car brand, well, the only vehicle owners that do that are Land Rover Defender owners. And I don't know if you guys knew this. But
flashlights.
No, they don't flashlight. They give each other the kind of like, hi, I'll wave at you.
The Land Rover way.
Yeah, the Land Rover way.
This whole thing, I'm about to break down, so just don't go too far.
Yeah. I want to be nice to you now because I might need you just now.
Exactly.
Well, you see, yes, it's that mutually beneficial sort of relationship.
But it's
I'm letting you into traffic. Yes, I'm hoping that you're going to tow me back.
Yes.
Mm.
You know,
but that is bike culture. I mean, which is really, really nice. You know, you cruising down the freeway and you see a biker broken down, you stop.
Yeah.
You don't know the guy from a bar of soap. You stop and you and anything I help with, you know, run out of petrol, you need a spanner or whatever.
Yeah.
And it is, especially further down south, your Vereeniging Vaal areas where the guys do a lot of the long distance breakfast runs, you find it quite often.
But it's a brotherhood though. That's the thing. Mm. There's a respect that we have something in common. Whereas I don't think vehicle owners have that because
We have too many commuters.
You're in a Tata and I'm in a Mercedes Benz and you know.
Mm. People ride motorcycles because they want to.
Yes.
People drive cars because they have to.
Yeah.
That's also true.
That's very true in this country. I mean, in other countries it is a means of transport, so maybe they do have to ride a bike just because it's the cheapest means of transport. That's but in this country, a bike is a luxury item.
Mm. Yeah, sadly it is. So I can understand that there's a greater sense of community there. I mean, if you just sit and travel and spend time in traffic, and those that ride bikes have got no problem with traffic, so peak hour, we'll go ride in it.
Mm.
Others of us will try and avoid it. But you'll sit there and you see so many people that are so distracted, and there's a million and one things that they'd rather be doing than sitting behind the wheel of a car, doing it because they have
to. But how unproductive. Mm. That's the bit that bugs me. Sitting in a car for 2 hours is so unproductive. It's time gone and wasted.
No, it is. Absolutely agreed.
Unless you're listening to our podcast.
So what you're saying is basically,
yes,
get your license, get a bike, get out on the road.
Absolutely.
Do yourself a favor.
Yeah, and watch
Pirelli Bike of the Year.
Yeah, because there's definitely a sense of freedom when you're on a bike.
It's fantastic.
It really, really is liberating to, Ian, and I'm going to say it again, even if you're on a scooter, there's a sense, there's just...
But your scooter's dirty.
Yeah, well...
I'm just saying.
Rained 3 months ago.
I was wondering, would Matt come on such a dirty scooter?
No. And the other thing as well about riding a bike, you can get cold, you can get wet, but there's something about, and with the amount of equipment that you can buy today for the rider, the waterproof stuff, there's something about taking on the elements and beating them, getting to your destination, still warm and still dry. It's like, you feel like you've actually achieved something. It's ridiculous, but you actually feel like just getting there in a car.
The bike's actually the cheap part.
It actually is.
Yeah, the kids. It is. Especially on the scooter.
I can attest to that fact.
All right, well, thanks very much for that insight, but we need to shift gears a little bit here as we're running out of time. Ty, I want to chat to you.
Yes.
There's some big changes happening here at Auto Central.
Yeah.
So you want to tell us a little bit more about what we're looking at?
Chad, and you know, you've been part of the team Auto Central's getting a facelift, let's put it like that, let's put it in car terms. And I think what we've done is we've restructured the show to broaden our spectrum of topics and just kind of highlight more kind of day-to-day kind of driving elements, topics, whatever. And it really is about, you know, reaching out to people who might not be interested in, you know, the engine capacities and that kind of stuff, but they still have an affection for cars. And I think it's about tapping into that audience. We obviously want to grow the show. You know, Auto Trader want the show to do well. We got a new time slot. We're going to be moving to Monday mornings at 9 o'clock straight after.
So there we go, guys. You got it. Your midweek mayhem is changing. And it's going to be a power hour on a Monday morning.
Straight off to Gareth's show.
Straight off to Gareth's show.
So those of you that are listening to Gareth's show can just tune in on a Monday morning. 9 to 10 is going to be the new slot for it.
That's right.
There's also going to be a slight change up here.
A little bit of a change up in terms of how the show is structured. From hosts, no one's really leaving. We're just creating more space for
shuffling
more people.
Around.
We're just shuffling around, and I think
more voices for you guys to try and have to identify.
Yeah, and I think we want to put, you know, experts like yourself, you know, on cars and car topics, in a slot that is dedicated to that. So that if that is all the listener really wants to listen to, they can.
can then choose that. You know what? We're going to give it a bash and see how it goes. We think it's the right thing to be doing, and we're really, really excited about the changes. It's been embraced by, you know, by
all
Cliff Central.
Sundry,
everyone seems to be excited about it.
We are. I mean, we're really excited to be moving to that time slot. Yeah. It's a lovely time slot. It's going to change things up a little bit. We know that sometimes this Wednesday afternoon malarkey can be a little inconvenient. So many of you guys are just catching us on the podcast. But we want you guys to also, you know, engage with us live in real time and that. Yeah. And come on, don't lie to me. Nobody's doing work at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning.
No,
really.
I'm still checking Facebook.
Exactly. You know, so
exactly.
And
yeah.
Anybody that schedules a meeting for any time before 10 o'clock on a Monday morning
is asking for trouble.
You're asking for trouble. Is no friend of mine.
Or they need to have lots of coffee in the boardroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sit and wait while finish the podcast. So yeah,
big exciting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, big exciting things coming. I know Vilmar and myself. Our roles and duties are going to change up a little bit. Change up a little bit here. Lawrence is getting roped in on a slightly more frequent basis as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And Ty, you're actually going to be steering the ship, eh?
We're going to try and give it a bash. I'm not, I don't think I'm up to speed just yet, you know.
The
mouth's working, but I don't know about that fancy board that you sit in front of. But
well, I still haven't figured this out.
Just push two buttons. Is that easy?
I said it. I saw him.
You mute who you need to mute, okay. And the rest is...
Yeah, and then... I don't think we're going to let the cat out the bag now, but we've got a really, really cool, awesome gentleman joining us as a co-host. And I think we'll reveal that maybe next week.
This is from 1 August.
From the 1st of August.
So next week is going to be the last time that we are in this time slot.
That's correct.
We are moving 1 to 2 p.m. on a Wednesday. Is no more. Well, after next week.
Yes.
From August. From August.
Talk
it
about
is.
A garbled message. Hey?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. How confusing.
Yeah. No, it's no more. Well, except for, no, I understand that. No, from August, folks, we are switching times. We're going to be moving to a Monday from 9 to 10. You guys can join us there. I do want to thank our guest, Harry. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's been
an absolute pleasure having you in here.
The pleasure's been all mine. Thank you.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Big thank you to Tyron. Thank you very much for joining.
Thanks,
and
it's always a pleasure to be here and
we're gonna
talk
chat
garbage
and,
with you guys.
And shoot the breeze. Yeah. Lawrence, thank you very much for
always
joining us and your opinion on the Arena Kedjo. Fulmery,
thank you for finding me.
I was only 5 minutes late. Listen, Harry, I look forward to doing this with you next weekend. Yeah. And then we're going to bring you guys some, I mean, Harry and then we're going to bring you back some info.
Yes,
on obviously the winner. The
and
bike
of course,
yeah.
And you're going to be covering it in the bike show, which screens on Ignition TV.
When is the competition?
We are away the 28th, 29th, 30th of July. And then on the 2nd of August, we have a special awards dinner for all the industry to come to where we announce the winner. So it'll be on the bike show the first couple of weekends or so in August. We'll get
fantastic.
It on to that.
Looking forward to that because we're quite keen to see what rises to the top.
So
can we get you back with the winners?
Yes. Okay. Yeah,
absolutely. But are we allowed to get you back before it's on DSTV? Or
not? Ooh.
Pressure there then.
I'll give you Lindsay's number.
No, I'm happy to come back anytime. I'll talk motorbikes all day, so just be warned.
Fantastic. Well, folks, from all of us here in the studio, thank you very much for joining us or downloading the podcast and that. We hope that you guys really enjoyed the show and do keep up with us, get involved with us and chat to us on the social media channels, whether it is Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, it doesn't matter. Come on and join us. Hashtag AutoCentral. Brought to you by autotrader.co.za. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Auto Central, powered by Autotrader on cliffcentral.com.